From hashtag Oscars So White, developed by April Rain, to performance boycotts at the Grammys, race and representation in entertainment is getting a lot of attention. We're going to chat about it on this episode of Pop Life.
Digital content on WAER is supported by SRC Incorporated, a not-for-profit defense contractor working to create an exceptional employee experience through respect, teamwork, and the freedom to innovate. Learn more at srcinc.com/careers.
With the recent positive representation of Black actors, producers, and filmmakers at the 2019 Academy Awards, there were several headlines questioning whether hashtag OscarsSoWhite is still relevant. With me to discuss race and representation in entertainment is Dana Gills. She is Director of Production and Development for the global content platform Lionsgate. She works with all content divisions, including TV, digital, and film, is associated with such films as La La Land, one of my favorites, John Wick 2, and Deepwater Horizon. I'm also joined by Charisse LaPree, Assistant Professor of Communications at the Newhouse School at Syracuse University. Welcome, friends.
Hello.
Thanks for having us.
First, Charisse, let's talk a little bit about, because you are hosting Dana in town to have a discussion at the university on race and entertainment. What do you guys hope to get at in that discussion?
Sure. This is the 18th annual Conversation on Race and Entertainment Media. Originally started with Professor Richard Dubin, who has since retired. But the purpose of the conversation is really to spend the time focusing on the unique situation of race, racialized representation, and racialized practices, practices regarding race at the industry level, specifically with respect to entertainment. The reason I picked this up in 2014 and started with a conversation with Larry Wilmore, and I've been doing it every year since then. And what I love about it is a couple things. One, rhetorically, when we talk about, quote, the media, and I hope your listeners can hear my air quotes, the media, we don't distinguish between industries. We don't distinguish between journalism, advertising, PR, entertainment, nonprofit, digital, all of these things. Each of those phenomena have a different set of practices, a different mission, different goals, etc. So I appreciate being able to focus on entertainment media in this conversation, what that means for our understandings of the world, our understandings of ourselves, the way we use entertainment, and as specifically related to the conversation this evening, how entertainment gets made and what are the things we need to consider when it comes to different representations of different groups.
And I hope we get to some discussion on why it's necessary and important. And I think if you look back at the success of the film Black Panther and the phenomenon that happened around it showed that there was a significant hunger for people of color in this country to see themselves represented positively on big films. And so before people are listening to this and say, you know, do we need to discuss this again? I think it's yes, and I really want folks to understand why it's necessary and important to have this kind of discussion.
And if I could just make one point, as we think about people making the argument that, you know, we don't need to keep talking about this, implicit in that statement is that we've solved racism. We've
right.
solved sexism. And I would like to believe that people will not say, oh, yeah, we solved racism because we had one majority Black cast blockbuster. Nailed it, right?
And one good showing at the Oscars.
Exactly. In fact, when we do that and say, you know, for example, affirmative action is no longer needed, just a side point, the minute the states that have banned affirmative action see a marked decline in Black and Latino students. So, you know, the minute we say we've figured it out, we've solved the problem, we can stop trying, we see that we haven't solved the problem because trying is what allows us to even make progress.
Right. Dana, I'm going to ask you to pass some judgment. So we had a relatively good showing at the Oscars,
mm-hmm.
but the film Green Card
Green
won.
Book.
Green Book, I'm sorry, won. won Best Picture. Many people say, and it's their opinion, that it won. It was a good film, but many people say it's the kind of film that makes folks comfortable, like Driving Miss Daisy.
Which folks?
Folks.
Some folks.
And so, I mean, in your opinion, was it a good showing at the Oscars? And and I don't want to ask if Green Book was worthy of winning, but is the industry still sort of holding on to old views and old feelings about the work that they celebrate?
Mm-hmm. Yes. I think that, you know, having watched the Academy Awards this year and seeing back to back to back, like the winners were people of color, they were people who come from marginalized communities, like in the showing of that, I felt so good. Like I was watching like, boom, boom, oh, we got this, we got that, you know, and it was super exciting to see, you know, real representation on that stage in ways that we've never seen before. And then we get to that final award. and, you know, Green Book winning, to me, it just set us back,
right?
You know? And I know that there are different points of view on Green Book as a movie. Is it good? You know, is it progressive? And I have my own point of view on that in particular, but I won't get into that yet. I feel like Green Book was another one of those types of films. And I always, about, you know, anything that I'm working to create or anything that I'm working to champion, I always ask the question, is this progress for the world that we live in today? And, you know, because it was another one of those types of films that felt very familiar to everyone, it didn't, in my opinion, seem like it was progressive.
Right.
And so if it's not progressive, then it is setting us back, you know, despite all of the work that filmmakers like Ryan Coogler, filmmakers like Barry Jenkins did, and they helped to shape what the stage looked like at the Academy Awards this year. Because when you have someone like Ryan Coogler who is hiring all of these people of color as department heads for his film, like those people are having the same challenges as the writers and the directors who haven't been given an opportunity to create certain films that depict, you know, marginalized people in ways that we've seen them before in terms of department heads for a film. So I'm talking costume designer, production designer, et cetera. They're up against the same challenges. And so people want to hire their friends over and over again. But the fact that we got to see these people exist, mm-hmm. and they're thriving and they're excellent at their craft was amazing. But then we saw who was behind the scenes on Green Book, mm-hmm. in contrast to that. And that's where it begins to feel like progress.
Green Book is not a black film. It's a film with a black character lead actor.
Supporting
actor. Which
I'm just saying.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, those characters, I didn't see the movie, but those characters seem to be equal in their importance. The story is certainly about that character. Even diminishing that to or putting it in the supporting actor category allowed for a certain comfort level for decision makers.
And the perspective from which the story was told.
Yeah.
And I think this is really important because we could talk about what is a good film, right? A good film makes you feel something. You go on this narrative. You empathize with the characters. Check, check, check. All of those things were there. But when we talk about why is Green Book problematic, I think it is imperative that we're able to point to this, right? That it's not the story of Dr. Shirley. In fact, there was one tweet that I saw, I don't remember who it was from, that said, note, during those acceptance speeches, nobody thanked Dr. Shirley. Mm-hmm. The entire thing was written from Viggo Mortensen's character's son's perspective. So it was written to tell the story through a white lens, coming to understand racism, overcoming racism for a white lens, to the point where Dr. Shirley becomes a tool with which Viggo Mortensen's character can develop as a person. Again, when we talk about tokening and what people of color or how people of color are contextually and discursively serving white maturity, white development, white emotions, it's repeated. And the reason I want to say this is because we can say Green Book sucked, right? I didn't like it, whatever the case may be. But if we can't pinpoint why it was problematic, then we're just going to do it again. And I encourage all your listeners just to Google, why is Green Book problematic? And there are a dozen think pieces that will come right up to explain it to you.
And Dana, you've been recognized for being a champion of inclusion and representation in the entertainment industry. And I wanted to talk a little bit about the there is a, I don't want to call it a conglomerate of black women. There is a movement of black women creators that are shaping some of the content that we see. Just a short list here. Lena Waithe, creator of The Chi on Showtime, one of my favorite shows. I love that. It's coming back next week, this week. Courtney Kemp, creator of Power on Stars, which is one of your properties. Chandra Rhimes, everyone knows, showrunner and creator, Grey's Anatomy, Scandal, How to Get Away with Murder. And Mona Scott Young, Love and Hip Hop, and there's probably half a dozen more I'm forgetting about.
Absolutely.
How do you see this? Is it a movement? Is this intentional? Are companies, media companies, turning to specifically to black women to help control narratives and have creations that represent a new audience that they're trying to reach? Is this intentional or is this talent just rising organically?
I think it's a mix. You know, I think that with the advance of technology, you see a lot of young creatives empowering themselves to tell stories that are authentic and real and slices of life that we've never seen before on any screen. So, you know, Lena was someone who, yes, she started, you know, working as an assistant for, you know, big time showrunners or directors. But then she went to the digital space to really express herself. And in the same way, Issa Rae started in the digital space. They sparked a movement of, you know, young women who had clear voices, who were confident and were able to galvanize, you know, an audience and prove that there were people who wanted to hear from them. I think simultaneously there were people like Shonda Rhimes and Courtney Kemp and Mona Scott Young who were creating content on their platforms, which were more mass, you know, in that they were TV networks or major TV networks or cable networks, and proving that they could get ratings and that there was an audience that wanted to hear from them. And so as people continued to see people showing up, whether it be on digital platforms or on, you know, these mass platforms, there became a real interest in identifying who are these creators that we should be in business with. And so we're still, you know, able to get access to those types of creatives and bring them into the mainstream, like studio systems or networks. But there's still work to be done. Mm-hmm. You know, there's still real work to be done.
Is that digital space a bit of an incubator
for
talent? Now, you yourself played in that space,
yes,
with Milk and Honey,
yes,
a digital series. Tell us a little bit about that.
So Milk and Honey was a digital series that I created with two of my good friends who lived in L.A. I lived in New York at the time. And we really felt like there weren't real reflections of us on any screen. And so we were craving to see more authentic representations of us. And so were our friends. So we really started pulling from our stories and our friends' stories and, you know, creating this story that we felt could reach that audience. Mm-hmm. and beyond. And I think the and beyond is very exciting for me now, because you started off talking about Black Panther and how it proved that there was a desire amongst Black audiences to see themselves represented in positive ways. I'd also add authentic ways. And I would just add to that, there's also an appetite from people outside the Black community to see those representations as well, mm-hmm. because we've never had those windows into our worlds. And so we are constantly looking for authentic creatives to come and really represent what are these communities like? What is this life like? What are stories told from these new points of view? I think Donald Glover, not a woman, mm-hmm. but someone who really broke the rules. Mm-hmm. Who really came into the TV landscape and brought all of his friends with him mm-hmm, mm-hmm. and said, we are going to redo and reinvent how we are telling stories, how we are portraying ourselves. And yes, you got the Black people who are happy to see those stories, but you also got the white people and the Latino people and the Asian people and on and on and on who are as equally excited.
And can I amplify something you said, which is also problematic in the way we talk about these things, right? So I had a student interview me about Black Panther, and they're like, well, what does this mean for young Black kids? I'm like, you can find a dozen think pieces about what it means for young Black kids. I want to talk about what it means for young white kids, to see that Black people can be superheroes, that Black people can be smart. You know, we just talked about what Obama means for Black folks, and yes, that's important. But I also need a whole generation of kids to know that Black people can be president.
Absolutely.
You know? So it's not just that these representations, yes, these representations are value, and as much as authenticity we can have, I like to say that there's no single good representation. The only good representation is multiple representations. But to change that conversation on a cultural level, because we generally don't get to see a diversity of Blackness.
And I would just add a global level.
Yes.
Because there was a response to Black Panther. There was a video I found online that I shared with our multicultural group at Lionsgate that showed the Korean response to Black Panther. And
which was what?
It was remarkable. And there were mixed reviews, of course, as there should be. But I think one of the most powerful statements from that video was, as Korean people, this I'm quoting, as Korean people, we don't get to see Black people portrayed in this way ever. So we have created, based on the narratives that have been shared with us, what Black people are like. And oftentimes, those images that are being spread globally are not ones that Black people have a hand in creating or shaping. So they're reinforcing certain stereotypes or notions about who Black people are. And this was the first time that that audience got to see such a different perspective on what Black women are like. You know, there were so many strong Black women characters in Black Panther, and the complexities of life for Black American men, African men, and the differences in nuance, you know, in those perspectives. So they were really wowed by the nuance that happened in that film, and also very hopeful that one day there would be a Korean, mm-hmm. you know, superhero, and felt like that was a possibility because this film existed. So
yeah.
I think it gave a lot of people hope.
You are with a major content producer and distributor. How receptive are these, not just your employer, but other content producers and distributors, how receptive are they these days to these Black creatives?
I think that this is a great time in this industry, because we've seen win after win after win after win. And people are still winning. Us just opened at over $70 million, which was, you know, created by a black man featuring black people in lead roles.
That dude has the magic touch.
He
right
really
now.
Does, right?
Jordan Peele has the magic touch.
Exactly. And so I think that as we continue to see more and more wins, there's a real opportunity to have discussions that we have not been able to have in the past. And so people are receptive. They're open in ways they have not been open. But I will say that there are still processes and practices that are still in place. There are still heads of this department and heads of that department who've started in very traditional ways in this industry. And as a result of that, you, me, as a studio executive, as a young person in this industry trying to create change, I have to figure out ways to get people to think outside of their normal boxes. And so I'm constantly looking for research and information and data that I can share about audiences and trends and cultural intelligence. And it's a blessing for me that I came from a place of understanding the impact of research and how it can change how people think. I started off in advertising and did a lot of that type of work. But I just try to share tools that help the conversation to be even more productive than it could have been in the past.
I think these companies ignoring the black financial capital and our ability to spend in terms of consumerism, they ignore that at their own peril. I keep pointing to the success of Black Panther.
Mm-hmm.
That was folks coming out in droves. That
Absolutely.
Was people coming out in costume.
And the same with Crazy Rich Asians.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
And Coco.
Exactly. So there are taps out there to tap into. Beer kegs to tap into to get this to pour out. I wanted to ask both of you though. With the rise in creatives of color and more shows and content getting out there, how, in your opinion, how are we being represented on film and television?
Actually, can I make one comment from your last comment before I answer that one? Excellent. Thank you. I think even though the money is evident, right, that, and I look forward to talking about this tonight, the way in which our processes, our psychological processes of stereotyping keep us from actually integrating the demonstrated phenomena where Black Panther becomes a token. Oh, well, that was a special case, mm-hmm. right? That we can write off that phenomena instead of seeing it as explicit tide shift. And I think, you know, as we talk about how industry works, the way in which we can say, look, this made a buttload of money. Let's get some of that money.
Mm-hmm.
Say, oh, well, you know, that's not going to happen again. And we go back to the same
right.
practices before.
But now we can point to Get Out and Us and other films and television shows that are doing very well
right.
to say that this is an authentic movement.
And to come back to the comment about is representation good, as I said, you know, no single representation is good. The only good representation is a multitude of representation. So, you know, Green Book wouldn't have been so problematic. It was, I mean, at the same time, it was up against Black Panther, Black Klansman, right? We had a diversity of representation in Black narratives in that, whatever it was, top eight Oscars. So I think that that is promising, that we can see, what's the word, blurred, right? Black nerds, and we can mm-hmm. see Black superheroes, and we can see Black criminals, and we can see Black supportive characters. Like, we see white characters in all dimensions. And Walter White, as a career criminal, can be an anti-hero and doesn't perpetuate a stereotype for white folks.
Right. And until one we of get, my favorites.
Yeah, until we get to that,
yeah.
Everything is progress, but nothing is solved.
Right. And I'm not, I guess I'm not asking if anything is solved, but if Black culture is trusting Black creatives with controlling our narrative, I guess what I'm asking is, are we liking what's happening out there with how we're being portrayed or not? Is it there a diversity, a range
I think we're getting,
of how we're being represented, and is it authentic?
We're getting there.
Yeah.
The more and more different types of creatives that step up and take a swing at it and are empowered to do so, the more and more diverse representations of us will be out there and exist. We talked about a lot of people who are creating different representations of Black people and different slices of Black life. And so I'm very thankful that they all exist. Mm-hmm. I do think that we have to continue to empower people who are tapped into the culture to create those types of narratives. And I think that we are on the right track.
This is a fascinating discussion. I wish we could go longer, but I know you guys have to run. I think it's an exciting time to both be a content creator and content consumers, you know, with the multitude of distribution points and companies taking risks with the kind of content that they're producing. I'm a huge content consumer, so it's a great time for me. I'm loving all the stuff. I can't even keep up with half of what's coming out. But I want to thank Dana Gills. She's Director of Production and Development for the global content platform Lionsgate. And Charisse LaFree, Assistant Professor of Communications at Newhouse here at Syracuse University. Thank you guys for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And I'm going to suggest that you all continue to listen to Pop Life, because we about to get all Game of Thrones-ish up in here. So Game of Thrones returns April 14th. Each week after every episode of this shortened but exciting season, we're going to have a show. I'm going to have a show with a super fan. We're going to break down the content, talk about the plot points, some major events going on, even plot theories. So please stick around for Pop Life and Game of Thrones. And that's coming starting right after April 14th. But thank you for listening.